my first ever All-Star game, which was 2004, when they introduced the teams, it was in LA, and Hey Ya was like, you know, top five song in the country. And so Outkast played like the first half of Hey Ya. Then they stopped singing and kept playing like the music. And they introduced the teams, both sides of the teams, like with like the Hey Ya music in the background without the words. And then once they finished introducing them, they went and finished the song.
Brian, do you prefer Outkast or Bone Thugs?
Well, I mean, this is where I would get booed because I prefer Outkast, but being from Cleveland, Bone Thugs is...
Okay.
Gotta say Bone Thugs.
But, no, I Outkast, man. That double album, I had that sucker. Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We're doing a Los Angeles-based discussion this week. I know, because LA doesn't get enough coverage on ESPN, and so therefore we thought we would try to even it out and give it more. I thought it was a good idea too. So did Andrew Hahn. Joining us from LA, where he just got back from the Clippers' six-game road trip where they went 4-2, is Om Yongmasook. How is it going, Om?
Going good, going good. A little running on fumes, but happy to be back home. That was an old school trip, Ryan. 6 games in 9 nights. I haven't done one of those in a long time.
Yeah, and they kind of limped to the finish. They lost in Chicago at the end of it, and they had four guys out due to load management or injury.
Yeah.
So, joining us from Atlanta, where he just covered the Lakers' third game of a 5-game trip. Where they beat the Hawks tonight, and now two big games coming up at Indiana, and then the big one on Thursday at Milwaukee is Dave McMenamin. Hello, Dave.
Hey, fellas. 10th out of the last 13 on the road, with two more to come to make it 12 out of 15.
Oof. And they've won them all. the only road game the Lakers have lost this year was the opening night game, quote, at the Clippers. They have not lost a game outside of L.A. all year. And that game, they were just kind of all over the place. And LeBron was just sort of force-feeding it to Anthony Davis. I'm kind of even throwing that one out. So they've been great, but they'll be tested. Didn't play their cleanest game against the Hawks on Sunday. Kind of limped to the finish, but literally and figuratively, because Anthony Davis tweaked his ankle. But they won, Dave, and... the Lakers continue to be maybe the story of the NBA so far.
Yeah, it was so – I mean, I don't want to spend too much time on this game in particular. It was such a disjointed effort, and you recognize what they're capable of doing where season-high 22 turnovers, shoot 5 for 31 from 3. LeBron basically has a back-to-back-to-back because Friday night they beat Miami – on their home court, the first team to do it, breaking on Miami's unbeaten streak. He flies to Ohio to see his son play on Saturday night, then flies to Atlanta on Sunday for this game. So obviously he didn't play on Saturday, but he had the extra flight and all that, the emotion of that game. And all those things I mentioned, those terrible stats that they had, didn't matter because LeBron just went out and dominated. He had a season high for the first half with 23 points tonight. He was making highlight reel play after highlight reel play.
They were having fun. They were having a lot of fun in the first half of this game.
Yeah, I mean, he was throwing it no look through the legs, bounced past to Dwight, who caught it in stride for a dunk. He was doing step back threes to beat the buzzer in the first half. He was running on the wing on a 3-on-1 fast break with Rondo running point, and Rondo kind of faked a lob up to LeBron and didn't throw it to him. So when Rondo took the ball in himself for a layup, LeBron went up and pretended to block Rondo's shot, which is something I've never seen in all the time I've covered. So, they had some fun with it. Frank Vogel was, I'd say, a little peeved after the game, recognizing that, like, okay, yeah, we got the win, whatever, but we got to be better than this. And they don't want the good times to stop. And certainly, I don't think anyone wants the avalanche of questions that would come if they lay an egg on Thursday in Milwaukee saying, it was all well and good, Lakers, but actually all those wins that you thought were so impressive, like, you're playing against one of the three or four teams that everybody thinks has a legitimate chance to win. And if you lose to them, you already lost to the Clippers. Like, okay, you're 0-2 against the real contenders in the league.
This is their toughest stretch coming up of the schedule so far, right? Indiana, which you can never take lightly at home, the way they can play hard. You know they're going to be up for that game. At Milwaukee, then they got Denver at home, and then the big Christmas game against the Clippers. This is probably going to be their toughest four-game stretch coming up. And the other thing, too, Dave, like you look at LeBron's minutes. He's playing in like the 30s, mid-30s, high-30s in the last three games. And at some point, you wonder, you know, I know he had the long off season off and things like that, but when is it going to catch up to him?
Wait, is mid-30s too many minutes?
Well, maybe, you know what? Maybe I've been around the Clippers too long.
I saw LeBron had another. He refreshed his feeling on load management tonight. I mean,
yeah.
You know, Dave and I got this in Cleveland. LeBron basically shut down, and he just was like, listen, I don't want to hear it. You don't know my body. I know my body. When people were chirping about the year he played 82, he basically said, shut up. And so
I have 38, 37, 37 in the last three games. So
who cares? Like, who cares?
I don't know. I care because I want to see the Lakers and Clippers healthy in the playoffs.
Like that to me is the only thing that matters. Clippers look like a team. Like, can we get them to play?
Here we go.
Trash. I mean, they will. They will. But the whole thing is like, I just want to make sure both teams, both LA teams, are healthy come playoff time. That's all that really matters.
Is there evidence that we know that load management actually works?
I mean, I guess you could argue that it worked for Kawhi last year. They won a championship.
That's an isolated, you know, example of one player in one team situation.
I mean, I think the biggest example of that is the length of the San Antonio Spurs title runs. Like, they're the pioneers of load management, right?
I suppose they were the ones to get the credit for it, but do we have actual empirical data saying that they have more banners, so they have more wins because of the way they managed it? Like, I'm not so sure that that's the case. And so, listen, I mean, the undercurrent among many undercurrents that when people talk about the league this year is that interest is down. People aren't tuning in. What's going on? I think encouraging people to sit out games. Kawhi is a different example, I suppose. Because I guess he has a degenerative knee issue, or I don't know exactly the term they're using to describe it.
Yeah, he definitely. Well, they call it left knee soreness, but he definitely has a knee issue.
It's tough, though. All the anticipation and excitement that surrounded that that Clippers team, and I think it was palpable in the offseason. It hasn't transferred over to the regular season by the way they managed their roster. Whereas the Lakers,
they would argue
it's
that
grown.
The excitement will be determined in the spring, but. I mean, like, look, here, this is a classic thing that comes to loggerheads, because what Dave is saying is an argument by the folks who don't believe in it, which is that, you know, show me the evidence. In fact, we were talking on the pod last week about how games lost to injury are actually up about 10% year over year, even with all these teams load managing a bunch of players. You know, there are people out there, I know Tom Haberstroh at NBC Sports is one of them, who believe that LeBron got injured last year because he was playing the fastest pace of his career, and that all of that extra effort resulted in a scenario that made it more possible for him to pull his groin. Other people could say he took a bad step on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
And
but, like, before last year was the fastest pace of his career, there was another season that was the fastest pace of his career. They didn't get injured. So, like,
I know this gets circular. We don't need to, but what Dave is saying is you can't prove, with Kawhi being an exception, you can't prove that load management in November necessarily leads to success in June. And then what Andrew said was, yeah, well, tell that to the Spurs, because that's what they did and helped them win the title. We can get circular logic. The point is, LeBron doesn't believe in it. Dave, also, I know that LeBron got asked tonight about going to Columbus to watch Bronny play on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to talk about that game too much. I mean, we have plenty of coverage about it. But did I see this quote right? He said that was one of the greatest moments of his life.
Yeah, he did. And going into it, he was using the term – I feel like it's a come full circle type of moment, I guess, actually experiencing it. And he listed the people that he had at the arena with him, obviously his wife, his daughter, Zuri, his mother, Gloria, his father-in-law. He had several cousins there. I think he mentioned his sister-in-law, Rich Paul, Randy Mims.
Yeah, a bunch of his high school teammates.
Right. The entire starting five was there. Brandon Weems, like right on down the line. Brandon Weems was supposed to be there. He mentioned the other night that he was anticipating him being there. And then to see his son on the court, to see his son perform, like I talked to LeBron after the game tonight, and I was like, you know, congrats. It had to be a heck of a night. Like, I watched it on the app like a lot of us, and I was into it. And he said, man, I was like so nervous. And I he's a very confident guy, even though he'll show vulnerability at times. And, he was being earnest with me. Like, they put him in a mental space that he really hasn't been in yet. And I'm like, well, that was like a season high for Bronny, right? He's like, yeah, like, you know, the coach gave him a bigger chance and then he earned it. And like, you know, that's a wild moment that the way it worked out, he gets the steal and the go ahead bucket.
Right. So. Yeah. And Bronny had only scored in double figures. That was their eighth game and he'd only scored in double figures in one of the games. Not because he's struggling, just because he's got a limited role as a freshman on a team that has 2 5-star players.
He was coming off the bench, right?
Yeah, he's been getting some spot starts. Zaire Wade, for example, is out right now with an injury, and they've got another guy sitting out. I don't want to get into too much Sierra Canyon and stuff, but it was a great moment. And one of the things that defined LeBron's high school career was that whenever the chips were down, he exceeded expectations. But those types of games didn't start happening until the end of his freshman year, when he had 25 games under his belt, and he wasn't doing it in front of a national television audience. For Bronny to do this, you know, this early was pretty remarkable.
Now, Brian, you know, and Dave obviously is younger, but he will have moments like this. But we all have these moments where we feel like, man, we are getting old. This had to be a moment that had to make you feel your age a little bit, right? To see like LeBron watching his son play against his old school.
I mean, not real. I mean, I did the daily podcast with Mina Kimes last week. She asked me the same question.
Yeah.
I went to a game. I don't feel nostalgia about it. I'm more interested in like what they're doing here. I wrote a whole story about this that published on Friday, and I don't know. I don't really want to be going over it. We talk about the NBA here. I don't feel nostalgia about it. I feel wonder, and I think even him putting him in position to, you know, basically boost his role in that moment is part of the wonder that I have with the way they're operating. The one kid that I talked to, because Bronny's not doing interviews right now, but the one player I talked to who's going to Kentucky next year, this spectacular two guard named BJ Boston, Brandon Boston, goes by BJ. He is an absolute stud, probably going to be in the NBA in a couple of years. And I asked him why he went to Sierra Canyon. He's from Atlanta. He transferred for his senior year. And the answer that he gave me was one of the most impressive answers that I've ever heard a teenager give to me, which was that he had 2 younger family members that he wanted to help get into a better school for better education. Mm. And Sierra Canyon was willing to take them and put them into school. And that's why I chose Sierra Canyon, to improve their position. He said, I already have my scholarship. I already knew I was getting going to Kentucky. I didn't, you know, I needed to have a play for a team where I would improve and get challenged. But there was a lot of opportunities for me. I wanted my family to be able to move to Southern California and have this. And for a kid to say that 20 years on from when LeBron started high school, you know, years on from when LeBron got banned for taking 2 free jerseys, even though he was playing on pay-per-view and selling out 20,000 seat arenas. For a kid to have that kind of awareness about his ability to be essentially a difference maker for his family, that's what I'm filled with wonder about and amazement about. I'm not filled with nostalgia. All right, so getting back to, I hope Andrew doesn't cut that whole thing. Andrew, what do you think of when I say affordable luxury?
I whatever you want me to think, Brian.
Stylish, trendy, innovative, Swiss made, and buzzer beaters. What does that mean to you?
I think you're going to tell me.
If you listen to this podcast, you know it means Tissot Watches and their fantastic buzzer beater promo. And I swear, as soon as they started this promo, there's been like five or six buzzer beaters in the NBA. And what is this promo? Well, every time it happens, fans will be rewarded by Tissot with trips, autographed merchandise, game tickets, and more. For your chance to win, you go to us.tissotshop.com/buzzerbeater. And coming something soon is a trip drawing to the All-Star Game in Chicago next February. And that's probably been won several times over now because we keep having these buzzer beaters. Naturally, Tissot is known for being the official watch of the NBA and also the official timekeeper. And, of course, they make phenomenal timepieces that you can purchase at their website, us.tissotshop.com, or in jewelry stores nationwide. You can see them on the wrists of NBA stars like Trae Young, Klay Thompson, and more. And Klay is especially showing them off on the sidelines this season. And again, remember, they have this incredible buzzer beater promo, which you can find out at their website. Or you can go check them out on Instagram at tissot.us and check out the hashtag ThisIsYourTime. Tissot. So the Lakers are 24-3, best record in the NBA. They're the number one seed, if they're even called seed.
Tied for the best record with the Bucks.
Okay, correct. Number one in the West right now. The Clippers are number two in the West. They're 20-8. They went 4-2 on this road trip. Both games that they lost, one game was without Kawhi. The other loss was in Milwaukee,
where they got thrashed.
They got boat raced with Kawhi and Paul George playing that game. But this is a sort of a key stat here. The Clippers are 16-4 when Kawhi plays and 4-4 when he doesn't. So when he doesn't play, their winning percentage is not quite at the Lakers, but it's close. So, Dave, when you say that you haven't been that blown away by the Clippers so far, I think you have to kind of pay attention to when they have Paul George and right. and Kawhi, which has only been I think less than 10 games so far.
Right, and I think it's just I want to see more of it. I want a reason to tune in to them more often. To see them be the dominant team that you'd think they would be able to do. I mean, I like seeing them have a 40-40 game like they did this past week. Like, that's the stuff I want to see.
That was amazing.
I mean, that's the stuff, that's when I think about.
That was in Minnesota, by the way. They both had over 40 points in a win in Minnesota.
So. Yeah, and that was without Lou Williams. So that's they obviously were more aggressive without Lou, and they got a lot more shots, too.
But, when I think about the 72-10 Bulls, I was a young fan growing up, and when Jordan and Pippen had a 40-40 game that season, it was like, oh, my gosh, that doesn't happen. And then I think to the 73-9 Warriors, Klay and Steph did it. And then I think to the 2016 Cavs doing in the NBA Finals with Kyrie and LeBron against those Warriors. That 40-40 thing, it's such a rare
feat. Yeah, I think it's happened 21 times in NBA history. Amazingly, Paul George has done it the last two times. He did it with Russ, and then he did it with Kawhi.
But I will say this, Dave. You are sounding a little old school by wanting to
see
great.
I am old school.
You are. Because, if you went back and asked the Warriors whether they wanted to dominate regular season games when they went 73-9 or they would prefer to have had more gas in the tank at the end.
That's such a misnomer, though, right? You know that them going 73-9 and going for it had nothing to do with them losing the NBA Finals?
Well, I think that it's not so much about what's real, it's what's perceived.
Right.
And what's perceived these days by a lot of teams is that is important.
Yeah.
I think going 7 in the conference finals against the Thunder affected the Warriors in the finals.
Sure.
I don't necessarily think
going 7. But was that dragged out because they went for the regular season? I don't know.
Well,
I would argue no.
The Lakers have I think they're They're number three, or they're tied for second as of tonight in defense in the league, which is just awesome. Offensively, they're fifth. And their net rating is second in the league at 9.1. Historically, if you've got a 9 or 10 net rating, you're probably going to the finals. That's the type of playing. Where when you look at the Raptors or the Clippers, they're 8th in defense, 7th in offense, and 5th in net rating. So it kind of goes to what we said earlier, kind of about their where they are in the standings. They're very, very good. They're just not dominating. Their numbers are terrific. They're right kind of where they need to be, but they're not blowing people away.
And the thing is, they're not even close to 100%. Besides all the injuries that they have, forget about Kawhi and Paul and load managing and all that, but they just got Landry Shamet back from a high ankle injury. They lost Patrick Beverley to concussion. Lou Williams has missed the last two games with a calf muscle injury. So they kind of have not really been 100%, and they're still, you know, I'm not going to buy 100% into Doc Rivers' whole, well, we haven't had any practice time. They haven't had much practice time, but these guys clearly don't look like 100% yet. Even though they're putting up 150 points in a couple games and things like that, they look like they're going to get much better, and we haven't seen their best yet.
I argued, I think, on the pod last week that the Sixers-Celtics games were some of the most important games in the East, and we saw a terrific Sixers-Celtics game last Thursday where the Sixers went to 2-0 against them this year. I think the Clippers-Lakers regular season games are humongous because I think they're going to teach us so much about the teams, which is why I hope there's reasonable health on Christmas, because we're going to get to see that. You know, last time around it was so new and Paul George wasn't playing. This will be a great test. Dave, do you think that the Lakers are eyeing the Clippers at all? Do you think that's starting to happen at all with these two teams at the top of the list?
100%.
Yeah.
That is the team. The Clippers are a team that the Lakers have had on their radar since opening night, since before that in the offseason when they were the team that got Kawhi and the Lakers didn't. And certainly as they've moved through this season, they want to be able to see what the standard of success is, what they've been doing and building, how it will go up against a bellwether like the Clippers. And so very strategically, when I sat down with LeBron James for a TV interview at the beginning of last week and I asked him about Christmas Day, he said what? He said, well, the season doesn't end there. Based on the result of Christmas Day, we know it's going to be a competitive game. We hope both teams have their players healthy for it. But he was already planting the seeds, knowing that I'm sure himself and other people in that locker room, in that front office, and on that coaching staff have been eyeing the Clippers and trying to make sure there's an alternate route if they do lose, that they don't all lose their minds because they've been building this game up so much.
It's crazy, Dave, that a 24-3 team, and this is certainly a feeling I get, that a 24-3 team would want this game more than, you know, a 20-8 team. But it certainly feels like just because the Clippers won that first game, and yes, the Lakers weren't the Lakers in that first game, neither really were the Clippers because they didn't have Paul George, but it certainly feels like the Lakers want this game more than the Clippers are entering Christmas.
Yeah, and obviously I haven't spoken to as many Clippers about it. I'm sure you have, but I've spoken to representatives, all three levels, Lakers, front office, players and coaches, and that's a team that's been on their minds.
Yeah. And they're not just competitors on the court, but depending on how things go, they could be competitors in the transaction market. I mean, both of these teams, in my mind, are championship-level teams. The Lakers at the start of the season, I thought were going to be good. I remember Dave and I had this podcast. We did a Western Conference preview. What did we say, Dave? Did we like think they were going to win?
I think we might have both. I think the over-under was 50.5 or 51. I think we were both right around the over. Like maybe anywhere third through fifth seed kind of the conversation we were having. Yeah,
we thought they were going to be good. I thought they were a little bit of a player short. They are not good. They are great. They are now, you know, barring, you know, some sort of injury catastrophe, they're going to be a 60-win team, I think. And they are going – they are just absolute beasts. The Clippers, I kind of felt like, had a really good team too deep all the way through. I thought – you know, I knew they were going to prioritize the regular season, but I thought they were going to be – for sure, the one or two seed. I thought Denver had a good chance to be number one because I thought they would just dominate at home. But now I feel like, guys, that they could be a bit competitors in the transaction market. Maybe not necessarily for trades, but you know, the buyout market, specifically Andre Iguodala. But there could be some other players. What do you think, looking at the Clippers, like if they need to do something to add to this team, what do you think it would be?
I feel it's three areas. I mean, look, Andre Iguodala would be great because he's a veteran that they could bring in who's been there and knows how to win. But I feel like they do need to address – they could use a veteran point guard. They could address their point guard position a little bit. I think they could use another big man because I think that's one area that you can expose them in. As good as Montrezl Harrell's been on the offensive side, defensively I think they can be had there with a good big, and that's why – I gave the Lakers the advantage with Anthony Davis if they met in the Western Conference Finals. But I do think you're right, Brian, that these two teams could be looking – could be competing for the same type of players that will become available through either the buyout market or the trade market. And I do think that the Clippers need to make one more move to kind of solidify themselves. They're very good, and I think they're going to be even better. But I do think they can really solidify themselves with one more move.
And like I'll piggyback on that because you were just saying that they'll be going after the same type of player. In having conversations with people around the Lakers, point guard is a position that's been brought up to me.
Yeah.
And it's a combination of, okay, you don't want to overwork LeBron. Also, Rondo has already had several injuries this season. Quinn Cook, young, nice player, but he's really kind of an undersized shooting guard the way he plays, really. And then – you know, Caruso is been surprisingly excellent on defense, but doesn't necessarily have the playmaking instincts there. But as I've, you know, kind of spoke to one person in the on the team about it, and then brought it to someone else, they brought up the idea, well, team chemistry can be a very fickle thing. And point guard in particular, do you get a different Rajon Rondo if you bring another point guard with this group? So I'm not so sure if on paper that would be their perhaps a deficiency that they could back things up a little bit by trying to get that 15th guy that would ultimately take DeMarcus Cousins' spot, or they just say, you know what, like we got to roll the dice with this team because the group that we have is congealing so well, we don't disrupt you know, kind of the secret sauce.
I mean, that's also why you have, you know, LeBron, right? That hopefully LeBron, the way he kind of masterfully runs a locker room, and with all the vets that they have, I would think that the Lakers probably could feel that whoever they would bring in would kind of, you know, the veterans could help bring him in and keep him in check.
So when I look at, when I think about Christmas Day and or a possible series, I think, okay, who on the Lakers is guarding Kawhi and who on the Clippers is guarding Anthony Davis? I think that comes right down to it. I'm not saying that LeBron couldn't guard Kawhi for a handful of possessions at the end of the game, and I'm not saying that Kawhi couldn't guard Anthony Davis for a handful of possessions, because I think both of them are superior defenders when they need to do it, but neither of them in my mind can do it for the full stretch of the game. And not that it's going to be a one-person job, but to me that really is going to come down who could win that matchup. What do you think the Clippers would do on Anthony Davis? What do you think they would do in a series? How do you think they would handle him with their current rosters?
The first thing the Clippers would want to do is have Montrezl Harrell try to get up into Anthony Davis, get physical with him, try to bully him, make him feel uncomfortable. I think we saw glimpses of that in the season opener. And, you know, look, again, it was Anthony Davis' first game with his new team, but Anthony Davis only took two shots in that fourth quarter, and he didn't look comfortable. I think they would look at that. They would try to wear him down maybe a little bit at times with Zubats. And then they have Jermichael Green, Patrick Patterson, some other bigger bodies. But it's definitely a concern. I think Doc would have to double-team Anthony Davis and then hope that waves of defenders they would throw on LeBron, from Patrick Beverley to Mo Harkless to Kawhi to Paul George, keep those waves of guys single coverage on LeBron, that's kind of, I think, maybe what Doc is going to have to do.
And Dave, ultimately, when you need it, the LeBron Anthony Davis two man game is going to come, and even the LeBron two man game with like Dwight Howard, with him rolling and Anthony Davis spacing the floor is pretty vicious. Dave, Paul George has really become a floor spacing two man because he's averaging almost 10 3-point attempts per game, shooting 40% on them, very highly efficient. Obviously can get his own, but you know, they have Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, they have Avery Bradley, they have some guys I think they can put on Paul George that can make and keep him honest. You know, what do the Lakers do with the Kawhi Leonard problem?
Yeah, I mean, I think Danny Green would be the person they would tell him, like, this is your job. Go get your boy, your former teammate.
Not that you're a trash, really, trash talking guy, really, right? Well.
But
he has next to no history ever playing against them. He's played against them in one game.
That's
career.
Correct. That's correct.
And I don't even remember what happened in that game. So, like, but I assume they've gotten to get you there in practice a lot, but I don't know what that's worth.
Well, what we do remember is Kawhi taking that game over from about the end of the second quarter through the third quarter, right, and kind of changing the complexion of that game. But, you know, you're right. I mean, I would think that all the times Danny Green has seen him in practice, he might know a few tricks here and there, but then it comes down to just, you know, Kawhi, he hasn't been as explosive as he was in that first game, in these last several games, actually. He certainly doesn't have that lift, but one thing he does have is the strength, and you see him bully guys inside all the time. And then, of course, the mid-range game where he gets his shots off.
But what you like about Danny Green is, in the funny thing we bring up opening night, that was his best offensive game as a Laker thus far. But his offense is, it's all a bonus. Like, they're not relying on him to score more than, say, 8 or 9 points a game, like where his average is at. And if they could definitely be just fine in a playoff series if he's going to expend a little extra energy on defense and that average goes down to 5 points per game, wherever it may be, if he's going to be able to give them somewhat of a stopgap solution against Kawhi Leonard at the point of attack, because at the rim, they feel pretty good about themselves. You know, of course, Kawhi's great at drawing contact and he has the respect of the referees and he'll still get some foul calls, but they feel like they can have a legitimate vertical protection, be it JaVale or Dwight or Anthony Davis there. And then they feel like they have the good point of attack in a Danny Green or a Caruso or Avery Bradley or KCP. It's just Kawhi is so good again that in-between game, and that's why he's one of the five best players in the league.
That's what would make it fascinating if the Lakers were to somehow get Iguodala. Then all of a sudden they can throw Iguodala on Kawhi and Paul George. It would just be really cool to see where he's going to land.
You know, watching the Lakers play this year, I feel like Danny Green's been amazing. He just fits exactly what they need so well. But his numbers are actually not that great. He's shooting 38% on threes, which is good. But last year he shot 46%. And his shots, his minutes are a little bit down. So the fact that the scoring average is down is not that big of a deal. But he's such a great fit, and even when he's not playing great, I think he's such a big addition. What happened in that Bucks game? What did the Bucks do that completely took the Clippers out of it? It was a 20-point game.
The Bucks wanted that game more. You could just kind of see it right from the start. Giannis was fired up, the whole team. The Clippers kind of, they went out early to Milwaukee and had a practice in Milwaukee instead of kind of staying in L.A. and practicing and then flying late. And I don't know, they just seemed more complacent to start that game. The Bucks, it was still a close game. It was kind of like at one point a 6 or 7 point game early in the third quarter, and then the Bucks just jumped all over them. The Bucks got into the defensively and they started making shots, and then the game was suddenly out of reach. And it got to the point, it was so bad that Doc didn't even want to put his starters back out in the fourth quarter, and did for about like 2 minutes, and then just basically cleared his bench with over 10 minutes to go, something I had never really seen before. That's how bad the Clippers looked that night. And Doc said it afterwards, the Bucks just kind of wanted this game more, and it clearly showed. And Lou Williams and the other guys used this almost the same comment over and over again, that we just got our asses kicked and it's going to happen again. And, you know, we learned a lesson that if we don't come wanting to play this game, we're going to get beat. I don't know. The Bucks looked at it kind of like what Dave was saying with maybe what the Lakers are looking forward toward Christmas. The Bucks clearly were looking at the Clippers as kind of a measuring stick type of game, and it showed.
Well, the Bucks are 2-0. They swept the season series. The other game that they played in L.A. was that controversial game on the front end of a back-to-back that Kawhi sat on national TV.
Yeah.
So they have the tiebreaker there. Dave, do you hear or feel any building anticipation towards this Bucks game on Thursday with the Lakers? Right now, you mentioned their record is essentially the same, and you know that this stuff could end up mattering in the end. This could be a game that's maybe even some ways more important than the damn on Christmas Day.
Yeah, I certainly felt that Vogel was drumming up some urgency with his response to the Atlanta game. Certainly keeping his eyes on that Thursday matchup against the Bucks. And listen, like, even less so than the Christmas Day game, I don't think this would be one that sends him into a tizzy or a tailspin necessarily mentally. But it's a legitimacy making type of night. And you go in there and you can say you have the MVP, we have two MVPs. And you can make that argument with how you execute for the 48 minutes. And listen, the Bucks are going to be without Eric Bledsoe, who's one of their key pieces. The Lakers could very well still be without Kyle Kuzma. So it's not like you're seeing the final forms of these teams.
We've got Dave McMenamin on the pod this week, and Dave is a man who has a very finely crafted beard. This is a man who takes great care of his facial hygiene, trimming, shaving, making it everything just so that he looks his best when he goes out there. And like so many of us, he couldn't do it without the fine quality products of Dollar Shave Club. And I can't stress enough the quality of Dollar Shave Club products. You know, Dave McMenamin is not using any run-of-the-mill stuff on his face. No, no, no. He knows that they've spent years developing, crafting, and refining all of their products, and that they can put into their products everything you need to look, feel, and smell your best. You name it, they have it. And Dave and many of us others like to use it. And right now, you can put the quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to the test. Their Ultimate Shave Starter Set has basically everything you need for an amazing shave. The Executive Razor, Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, and the Post Shave Do, which is Andrew Hahn's favorite. The best part is you can try for just $5. After that, the restock box ships and is priced at the regular prices with the regular sizes. You get your Ultimate Starter Set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/hoop. That's dollarshaveclub.com/hoop. And remember, the cool thing about Dollar Shave Club is everything you need to shower, shave, style your hair, brush your teeth, and everything else automatically restocked. The products that you use whenever you need it, whether it's once a month or a few times a year, they send it to you. DollarShaveClub.com/hoop.
H-O-O-P.
There you go.
No, I want you to say H-O-O-P.
Oh. DollarShaveClub/hoop. That's H-O-O-P.
Well, how many teams are we really going to say has a chance to win the championship right now? I mean, we go
question.
Lakers, Clippers, Rockets, Bucks, Celtics, Sixers. I mean, is there anybody else in that conversation?
That's actually a bigger list than we have a lot of years at this point.
Right.
Certainly a lot of the last few years where the Cavs and Warriors owned the league pretty much for a lot of that time. Other than the Lakers, who in the West do you think is potentially a challenge for the Clippers? The Rockets and Lakers haven't played yet.
Well, the two games I've seen them play with the Rockets, there's always been some sort of drama with the Clippers, which kind of, I'd love to see those two guys those two teams play in the second round, it would almost feel like for the Clippers, it would be like if they were to get the Lakers after that, two type of Western Conference finals back to back. Because when they play the Clippers, obviously you have a lot of things going on with James Harden, but then there's the Russell Westbrook, Patrick Beverley thing going on, and Austin Rivers, Doc Rivers. There's a whole bunch of narratives and drama that can happen between those two teams. The Rockets have played them pretty tough in each game. So I'm curious to see how they're going to face, how they handle the Denver Nuggets, especially with a guy like Jokic. Jokic hasn't quite been the same Jokic that we saw in the playoffs, but certainly we know that's in him. And then that will be a good kind of measuring stick to see how the Clippers will handle a very talented big in my mind. So I'd like to see that they're going to play soon. But yeah, I mean, it's you know, everybody's talking about Clippers Lakers. I'm trying to think maybe the Rockets might be able to challenge just because James Harden is such a great offensive force and he's on a roll. But the Clippers defense, I have a feeling is only going to get better. When they get healthier, I think it's only going to get better.
Wait a second, Brian, are you still acting like the Clippers are the current West front runners for the finals?
In my mind, I still think I would give them the edge.
That's very okay. Okay,
but it's more for what they can be than what they've shown so far.
Okay,
but I mean, you know, I'm telling you, like if they start a series now, trying to beat the way Anthony Davis and LeBron are playing, like this is as impressive as LeBron's ever looked with a teammate.
Yeah,
it's hard to compare them to the Heat days because that, you know, that three-headed monster and the way those guys were playing could really mess up opponents, and they were so athletically dominant almost every night. It's just hard to compare it. I more go in my head to the Kyrie LeBron days, and Dave was there every step of the way. I was there for most of the steps. When LeBron and Kyrie played well, you weren't beating them. And ultimately, that's what happened in the finals that they beat the Warriors in. You know, people talk about, you know, Game 7, but Game 5, LeBron and Kyrie both had over 40 points in Golden State. And yeah, Draymond was suspended, but guess what? Even if he was there, they both scored 40. The Cavs weren't losing. Dave, the way that these two guys are playing right now, I mean, I have a hard time. I mean, if they're playing this way, I don't know if they're losing, but I would assume that the Clippers could maybe give them some issues. But this is even better than LeBron and Kyrie, at least right now.
I mean, way better off the court than LeBron and Kyrie.
Well, that's true.
Light years ahead of where that relationship ultimately ended up. On the court, it just translates so well because, you know, some of the best that we ever saw LeBron and Kyrie play together was you take your turn, I take my turn. And sure, we'll make the defense imbalanced by attacking from different angles, but it wasn't this natural kind of play off one another the way we can space the floor with our ultimate skills. And it's so spectacular. And then the part, though, that to me, where you look at, okay, the way the Clippers are approaching the season versus the Lakers with more of a sense of urgency. I remember I covered the late Kobe Powell years, and Andrew Bynum was coming onto the scene, and they won the championship in 2010 with Bynum dragging up one leg up and down the court for basically the entire playoffs. And Kobe had this quote where he talked about players playing injured or playing through injuries. And he said, when you look around, when your teammates look around the locker room, you don't want them to look at you and think you're the punk. And to me, part of the beauty of LeBron playing every single game this year and not worrying about load management or not worrying about the minutes is that it's setting a standard for a guy like Anthony Davis, who we had another example in this Atlanta Hawks game where he tweaks his ankle. It's against one of the worst teams in the league. He could have, maybe in past iterations of the way he viewed the game, sat out the rest of the game and gotten treatment, but he told himself, no, I got to play through this. And I think that kind of mental toughness, that sharpening that's going on now, is a value that is, you know, being added to this regular season experience.
God, I can hear the New Age thinkers banging their head against the wall listening to this.
Like, yeah, well, that's fine. Come at me. That's fine.
Dave, I think you have a great point. Because everything I've heard about AD is how he's really enjoying playing on a winning team and how it's so much different for him than it was in New Orleans. And there definitely is a standard being set for him that he feels a certain type of pressure that he does need to play. He needs to play through injuries, and he wants to be there for this team because they are winning, and he's enjoying it.
And like, he still basically had this game ceiling block in this Hawks game on Trae Young in transition while on, you know, hobbling. And guess that shows you that you have something in your deep reserve that maybe you don't necessarily tap into. And guess what you got to have to win a freaking championship? Something in your deep reserve you didn't necessarily knew you had in you. And I think this is the approach that, quite frankly, is different than the approach that LeBron took in all those years in Cleveland in his second stint around. And perhaps this is course correcting and recognizing that, you know what, that wasn't the way to go. Like, we should have been pushing the envelope a little bit more during the regular season. And perhaps he is taking that experience and applying to this Lakers team.
I think that's like a key difference between these two teams, with the Clippers and Lakers, that the Lakers, all those guys on that team, they look to LeBron. They have a new coaching staff. So obviously LeBron is like the guy everyone looks to set the tone. Whereas the Clippers, like, yeah, Kawhi and Paul are there, but this was also a roster that was there last year that won 50 games. And also you have a head coach who's been there before and done it in Doc Rivers. So there isn't that same type of urgency for like Kawhi and Paul George to set the tone the way LeBron has to this year with this Laker team.
Well, when I look at Davis and LeBron, the one thing that they can do that Kyrie and LeBron couldn't is they can defend, especially the way LeBron is. LeBron basically didn't defend at a high level other than in fits and starts during his second time in Cleveland. LeBron's defending at a very high level right now. When you add their ability at the defensive end, I mean, there was a stretch the other night when the Lakers had that really nice win in Miami where between LeBron and AD, between offense and defense, they made like six plays and like seven, and maybe even less, five possessions where you just jaws drop and you're like, oh my God. But also when I look at the Clippers, I see more margin for error because when they're at full strength, they have four different guys I think can be difference makers. Now, Harrell has to be set up, but he can be a difference-making player. I'm not saying that there aren't certain nights when other Lakers can do it, but that's where I think the star power may go to the Lakers a little bit because LeBron is such a unique player, but the depth of the star power, it goes to the Clippers. And, I mean, this is one of the reasons why I'm so excited about these two teams.
I got to say, Brian, this season, one thing I've been surprised about with Montrezl Harrell is that he has shown more of an ability to take guys off the dribble and become a matchup problem for bigs this season without the pick and roll. That has actually shocked me this season, that how many times he takes guys off the dribble and scores inside or draws a foul. But it'll be a lot different against Anthony Davis because he did struggle a little bit the other night with a taller Karl Anthony Towns on him. And of course, Karl Anthony Towns is nowhere near the same defensive player that Anthony Davis is.
Anthony Davis on defense, he does it without, you know, a lot of times great defensive players, they do it with, it's like they do it loudly. Like you see their defense. But what Anthony Davis sometimes does is, like, you'll see a guy go in, and he gets his shot blocked, and like you didn't even know Anthony was defending him on the play.
Yeah,
you're just like, wait a minute, Anthony Davis got that. I mean, he just, his subtleness that he does on defense. I've never watched Anthony Davis this much. Obviously, I was aware of him. I've voted him on all NBA teams, but now I watch almost every Laker game, or at least part of every Laker game, and so I'm seeing him more, and so I'm appreciating him more, but. I mean, I don't know if you feel the same way, Dave, but you know, he's blown me away with the subtle plays he makes on defense.
Well, their last road trip was kind of the coming out party, I should say, for his defensive player of the year campaign. You had Frank Vogel before their first game of that trip, stating it that he is going to be the defensive player of the year. And then he closes out that game against Jokic and Jamal Murray by making play after play, shutting them down. And then they go to Utah, second half back-to-back, another tough environment in terms of atmosphere and crowds and all that stuff. He makes a play where he's closing out from 1 foot in the paint all the way out to the three-point line, gets a contest on Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles gets him in the air on a pump fake, but he's able to recover and block Ingles' shot clean from behind on the second effort. And those are the type of stuff that it's like, it's so extra, so, you know, superhuman compared to most of the players that are his peers in this league, because they don't have the physical skills for it. And sometimes you do kind of take it for granted, because he looks a little lackadaisical sometimes. Whether that's a smoothness or whether that is kind of a little bit, he has Tim Duncan in him where he doesn't show a ton of emotion. But then you recognize and you watch these plays on loop after the game is over, and you're like, oh, he just completely smothered what they were trying to do offensively. It's been impressive to watch. And again, it's allowed them to have this consistency where you can win a game like they did in Atlanta today, where the team goes 5 for 31 from three and has 22 turnovers, because Atlanta ends up shooting 36% from the field.
So before we go, Ohm, if you were the Clippers, what would be your biggest worry? The thing that you had to deal with or correct or be concerned about from now until you may have to play the Lakers in a playoff series?
So I'm going to stick with the same thing we said, talked about at the beginning of this pod. It's health. I mean, for them, it's all about health.
It specifically, one guy's health.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, they've got little nicks and injuries to other guys. But yeah, obviously with Kawhi, and like I said, my concern is that, you know, Kawhi has not looked like the same explosive guy that he did in season opener to now. He looks like a guy that doesn't have much lift. Yes, he will throw down a highlight dunk on someone every now and then, but it's still kind of like he doesn't look explosive. And maybe that's who he is, kind of like, you know, like
I have to say,
yeah, this is one thing. And Bontemps like, this is what he looks like all the time. And I'm just like,
this is the thing with Kawhi. You can never really tell whether he's feeling good or not, because right when you're like, boy, Kawhi's struggling tonight, he'll make a play that you're just breathtaking. And other nights you think, boy, he looks great. And then he'll go take a jumper and you'll get a half inch off the ground. I can't figure it out. And that's another reason why his injuries and the load management, it's like, is he load managing because they decided at the beginning of the year this was going to be load managed, or is his knee sore? Like, you know, like last year he would like limp all the time, but he would go out there and win series MVPs.
Yeah.
You know? So like it's very difficult to read.
If we're going to go by his word at the start of training camp and media day, he said that he was going to be load managed differently. He was feeling a lot better than he did last year at this time, and he was saying that it wasn't going to be the same as it was with Toronto, but it has been so far the same as it was in Toronto.
All right, so Dave, if you're the Lakers...
Well, I go health in the opposite direction because, okay, they're not going to win it unless they have AD and LeBron healthy. So if one of those guys aren't, like, let's talk about something else for the rest of this podcast. So let's assume health there. But I want to see when they have Kuzma healthy and they have Avery Bradley back off this hairline fracture and they have Rondo back off, you know, the latest ailment, what their rotation actually looks like. Can KCP, if he goes back to the bench, still be an effective player? Does that displace Alex Caruso, et cetera, et cetera? I'd just like to see a good stretch of 20 or 25 games with the players that, you know, the eight or nine guys that would be the postseason rotation, all healthy and, you know, playing the way we could feasibly see them play in the postseason.
Yeah, to me, I think they would love to be able to rely on a third offensive guy. I mean, we all thought it was going to be Kuzma start of the year. He's been banged up with a couple of different injuries, but even when he's been healthy, he hadn't played much. I've said this before, but I'll say it again. If you look at the history of role players playing alongside LeBron, and he's a role player, he's a high level role player, but he's really a role player. He's not a star in my mind. They've either been great defenders or great shooters. Good defenders or good shooters. to really thrive alongside LeBron, because that's what you're going to have to. That's where you're going to get your opportunities. And Kuzma has not really proven he's either at this point. And so it's one of the reasons why he just wasn't getting a lot of minutes relative to where he could be. I mean, Danny Green.
Let me explain that. Let me just break that down to you. Like, that's accurate and that's fair on the history of LeBron's career. With this specific group, the reason why Kuzma's minutes are down about 10 minutes per game is because the centers are playing so well. They didn't anticipate JaVale and Dwight to be this effective. They thought they would have to play AD in the regular season, let's say 50% of the time at center. Because Dwight and JaVale have been so good, then they're only playing AD 25% of the time at center. So you put him at the four, Kuzma's best position is to stretch four. And so all of a sudden, now you could say you're putting my point with your point merged together and say, well, if he was better at shooting or better at playing with defense, then he could play the three more often. But really, the stretch four is his ideal position with this group. And I think it could come really more, become more valuable in the playoffs. And not, this is not to say that JaVale and Dwight, why shouldn't they be able to keep this up? But in the playoffs, things get more matchup oriented. They could be playing against higher level offense and be put in tougher pick and roll scenarios where, you know, they become more of a liability to be on the court at the center position. And then you put AD at the five, all of a sudden Kuzma's role increases again.
Brian, before we go, Dave wrote an article earlier this week pointing out that the Lakers are currently on pace to win 72 games. I think after the win at Atlanta, they're on pace for 73. The Bucks have the same record. They're on pace for 73. By the end of the year, do we have two teams, one team, or zero teams that have 70 wins?
Oh, I mean, come on. That's a bizarre question to ask. I will say that there's one thing I thought there would be this year is parity. And what I didn't understand was that was going to be parity amongst the bad teams. There are really a dividing line of have and have nots. The middle has kind of drained a little bit in the NBA. So there are a lot of teams that are they get pounded. And there's already been a whole bunch of 35 plus point games. I think it was last weekend or somewhere around there. There was two games on the same day where the team lost by 40 points, and that was the first time in NBA history that happened on the same day. So I definitely think we're going to see some inflated win totals. One of the things I thought we'd see this year was a whole bunch of teams hovering around like 50 wins. I now don't think that anymore, but I would. We've only seen 70 wins twice in NBA history. I think there's a reason for that. And both of those teams may have had three or four Hall of Famers on them. So I'm not going to go there. But I think what Dave's point is that the Lakers are playing historically great basketball, and that I would tell you that no LeBron team, even the Heat teams, which were his best teams, have impressed me coming to, you know, to mid-December as much as this Lakers team has impressed me. Those Heat teams, the best team he's been on in my mind was the second Heat championship team. And they won the 27 in a row, basically starting after Christmas onward into January, February. They didn't start like this. LeBron's teams historically play their best basketball later. So the Lakers are pretty damn impressive, but I don't know about 70. Dave, I know you wrote the story, but are you thinking?
I would, for me personally, I would love to be able to say I covered a 70 win team, but I'm not ready to go there. Let's give it some time. But the thing I'll go back to that I've mentioned several times in this conversation, LeBron has no intentional letting up. This isn't like, okay, I'm going to make sure we get out in front of the pack and then I'll pick some games here and there to take off. That's not his intent this year. And whether that is because last year he only played 55 games and because there was the Wash King, you know, supposed derision that he received and where we're not even sure exactly whether that was made up or exaggerated in his own mind to try to motivate himself or not, or whether it's just because maybe he learned some lessons along the lines of the way those Cleveland seasons went, where, you know, you talk to some people with the 16-17 Cavs, and they still feel like they might have left one on the table based on the way that they managed that year. And maybe he's applying those lessons to this group.
This is going to be great, Andrew. The Lakers are going to be 65-12, 5 games left, need to win out, and LeBron – Dave's going to be calling for LeBron and AD to play 48 minutes each.
That's right.
And LeBron might do it.
I just want to point out that in all of this, you went ahead and made a prediction. No one's winning 70 games this year. The man that does not make predictions.
Yeah.
Aggregate it.
Well, you always
How many seasons we have in the NBA? 73 or something like that?
Yeah. Andrew always likes, because he knows I don't make predictions, he always likes to try to...
Well, no, this is the thing. It's that you say you don't like to make predictions, and then when no one's listening, you just rattle off a bunch of predictions.
Yeah. Well, is Andrew always trying to bait you, Wendy?
In so many different ways, you have no idea. all right, well, thank you for listening to this LA edition of the Hoop Collective podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm so sorry to the middle of the country. We talked about the Bucks a little bit, but we're getting back to normal coming soon. Oh, that was all. Okay, thank you, Om. Thank you, Dave.
Thanks,
Kwanzai. Thank you, Andrew. Thanks for listening.